Our wave's countdown began as I looked at my new friend Chow. She was smiling and so was I. We counted together. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The third wave finally started. We were off, and there were so many people. Today I felt more than prepared. I felt honored. I was accepted for the April 15th, 2013 Boston Marathon event. Among other elite runners, I qualified and met the BAAA standards. After 3 attempts to shave off time, I was successful in Seattle, Washington on November 27th, 2011. I used that time of 3 hours, 31 minutes, and 35 seconds to run Boston 2013. A maximum of 27,000 runners in the whole world competing to run the 117th annual event. I decided to train back on the West Coast, fulfilling the challenge to run mountains instead of hills. In October of 2012, just a few months before Boston in April, I adventured to Hood River, Oregon. Its windful breeze and watered scenery, looking down from the canyon, had a sense of relaxation and peacefulness. I had a capacity of only 2,000 runners. This is my kind of race. It's such a beautiful place to run in the fall. The leaves large and full of color, falling as we ran. I knew that would help me for Heartbreak Hill at mile 22 in Boston, the most challenging hill on the course, and maybe of all marathons. So the morning of the Boston Marathon, I felt prepared but nervous. There would be more runners, and I felt the urgency to remind myself I'm safe and not back in Iraq, where my nightmares still haunt me of the war life I once had. I knew then it was 2013 and not 2006, when I'd returned from service. A sense of time was assuring me as I gazed at my Garmin watch on the bedstand that it was present. My mother had to remind me to remember my Garmin, which lets me know what my heart rate pace per mile at an important tool for a marathon runner. Mom reminded me again, this time of my socks. Kaylin, what socks are you going to wear? They're waiting downstairs. Yes, Mom, I got it, I said. I was getting flustered as I have troubles coming back to the present time. My mind tends to wander. Our friends from Argentina waited downstairs. We would all go to the start of the race. We were staying at the Westin in Waltham, Massachusetts, about 18 miles from downtown. So we needed to get there sooner to beat traffic. I contemplated which shoes to wear. My injured ankle needed the best support. I grabbed my shot block shoes and sunglasses and finished tying my Brooke Pier projects, much lighter than my old Ravana 3s, only broken in for a few hundred miles. I wore my Reebok protective sleeve over the compression socks on my left ankle, giving it more support. I wanted to run and enjoy the feeling of being amongst the other runners and not think about my ankle. The bus ride smelled of bananas and Vaseline. It's such a strange combination of scents, but as you get to know the routine of a runner, it kind of makes sense. My friend and I talked about upcoming races. He asked me if I was going to run the New York Marathon. Maybe my half marathon time in Grand Rapids, 1 hour and 14 minutes, could qualify. I loved hearing his passion about running, his tips, how to overcome during obstacles, mental and physical. His personal best was 3 hours and 14 minutes, but today he wanted to break his personal record below 3 hours and 10 minutes. I just want to finish, I said. We got off the bus with half an hour to start time. There I met a woman in line, Marissa, from Appleton, Wisconsin, who ran Fox City's marathon, but more importantly, she had two rolls of toilet paper in her hand. I wasn't quite sure why until she said, "Do you need some? They're all out, but you can have some of mine." Yes. I could sense then that runners are a unique breed. There's something about us that brings a unity, and they know when to help one another. I thanked the woman and wished her luck. We were at the start of our wave, and the countdown began as I looked at my Garmin, which was ready at 000. We counted together 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The third wave, finally started. We were off. So many people. College students with Boston University sweatshirts, kids with bananas and oranges, people from all over the world watching us. France, Spain, Russia, they all watched at this moment. The large crowd made me nervous. I couldn't see all my surroundings, which is what veterans are trained to do. Not only see your surroundings, but know whether or not anything stands out, is out of the ordinary. I felt a small panic. I squeezed my shot blocks to remind me I was Boston. I remember what my mom had said. "Chick, you made it this far. Just enjoy it. Embrace it." My dad sent me a text message, "Good luck, love you." All sorts of messages streamed in, and my music kept stopping from all the newsfeed of good luck. I ran and ran, quickened my pace, then slowed when needed. After mile 14, the crowd kept getting larger and larger, expanding in great numbers, lining the path. Heartbreak Hill came up fast. I made it. I called my mom and let her know where I was in case she was waiting for me at the finish, not to worry. She stood next to a blue mailbox on Boiler Street. "Chick, I'm proud of you," she said. She moved away from her spot at the mailbox and toward the finish. A few minutes later, I thought I felt a concussion, like an IED in Iraq. That's when I knew something wasn't right. I was at mile 25.8 and was told to stop. I took off my headphones. Then, 30 seconds later, an explosion. It was loud. I could hear and feel the vibration going up my feet and into my ears. The streets became silent and everyone stopped. "There's been an explosion," I heard someone yell. I knew that sound. I was back in Iraq. My year in combat trained me to fight, not flight. This experience too familiar. I took cover. I booked it out of there, grabbing female and male civilian runners with me, pulling them to safety. We were redirected by traffic. Most of the time, we wouldn't know where the motors came from. I moved quickly while others stood frozen in shock. My heart raced and sweat poured. Black smoke came from around the corner of Boiler Street. Paramedics rolled out stretchers. Firemen, even other veterans, helped keep things under control. I could smell burnt flesh and saw blown off limbs. The mixture of singed metal and blood scents brought me back to sitting as head gunner on a convoy's heavy artillery. I was better than most of the male soldiers in my platoon, so I had a lot of road time looking for Haji traps while riding on the Humvee turret at 60 miles per hour, the wind blasting my goggles, the horizon of threatening Iraq in front of me. But we were in a civilian world, in Boston. My two worlds had intersected, and I could not distinguish my past to my present. This was uncertainty, confusion. I had to be strong and take action like in combat. I led a group of civilians to evacuate immediately. It was said that there may have been more explosives in the place, ready to ruin the lives of others. All towers were shut down. I called my mother, but there was no answer. There was black smoke and blood on the streets. People everywhere panicked. There was the possibility more bombs set up in place, and it was coded to us that we needed to evacuate immediately. As a military veteran, I know protocol and procedure of evacuation and the importance of safety. Hundreds of runners and I evacuated, walking 10 blocks to Copley Square Park. We all waited. I called my mother's phone again. Nothing. An ambulance zoomed by, lights flashing, sirens on. The runners around me reconnected with their families. After 2 hours, my mother and I were able to reconnect to steps of a Catholic church. We hugged tightly. My mother sometimes would ask me about Iraq, but I couldn't explain until now through this embrace. I hugged her as if I just ended a long patrol in Baghdad. I told my mother, "Let's grab a cab and go back to our hotel." After we arrived at the hotel, we phoned family and loved ones.